I'm really excited about this chapter today. It's just it's just an amazing story of how God is working in the everyday lives of His children, of His people. And we're going to be talking about today, we're going to be talking about these certain happenings in these individuals' lives and how those happenings are really God's happenings. So if you will, open your Bibles up to Ruth chapter 2. As he looks back on his long life, Jaber Crow, who's the main character in Wendell Berry's novel, reflects on how God's guidance and providence often catches us by surprise. Isn't that true? He says, I can look back, this character says, I can look back from where I am now and feel that I've been very much in charge of my life. Oh, he says, I can't look back and feel that I've been in charge of my life. He said, I've made plans well enough, but I see now that I've never lived by those plans. Nearly everything that has happened to me has happened by surprise. He says, all those important things that have happened in my life were a big surprise. And whatever has been happening usually has happened before I had time to even expect it to happen. And so, when I thought that I was in charge of my story, I really see that I've been carried along all the way. Is this because, he says, that we are in an eternal story that is happening only partly in our time? You ever think about that? That you and I are part of a greater story. A greater story that is happening in eternity. A greater story that God is working out in our little stories here and now. When I began this series, I gave the theme of God's hidden hand, and now I really want to kind of bring that hand out into the light here, out from the shadows. And today, this story, this real story that has happened reveals to us how God works out his larger story and our smaller ones all together for his good, for our good, and for his purposes. Here we see an up close and personal view of the doctrine of God's providence. And I just want to give a quick definition of the doctrine of providence. The doctrine of providence is the preservation, care, and government, which God exercises over all things that he has created in order that they may accomplish the ends for which they were created. So we're going to be talking about the doctrine of providence and how God is guiding his people according to his eternal plan, but how he is working out a plan for their lives in the process. I'm reading a book right now about the construction of the Panama Canal, and it's an absolutely fascinating book. And the engineering feat that went behind that is just incredible. And all the right people had to be there. All the right equipment had to be there. It had to be the right circumstances, and everything had to work just absolutely perfectly. And I'm looking at how God was even moving the certain people into the right places to get that job done. And what was accomplished was one of the greatest engineering feats in history. But I'm also looking at that as a microcosm of what God is doing on a grander scale. He has this design in his mind, and he is working and bringing all the pieces to the right places at the right time, under the right circumstances, to work out his eternal plan. And it is absolutely amazing. Folks, you and I are in God's story. And when we're in God's story, things, well, they tend to happen. We're going to be looking at four happenings here, how these happenings happen to these individuals in the story that we're talking about, and how these happenings are God's happenings, and how these happenings affect people way beyond those in our story. The first happening that I see here in our text today is we happen upon a certain place. Verses 1 through 3. So Ruth chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please, may go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. How many people in here have heard of the Gideon ministry? You ever go to a hotel room, right? Open up your Bible drawer and you find the Gideon's Bible. Many people heard of that, and many people know about that ministry. How many people know how it began? Yeah, I didn't know how it began either until I read this illustration. Well, it began, its beginning was a coincidence. It was a fall evening, 1898. A man named John Nicholson arrived in a hotel in Wisconsin about 9 o'clock, needing a room. It just so happens that every room was taken. And did you know back then, if every room was taken, you could actually share a room with a stranger. I'm glad that that doesn't happen anymore. I'd get some, who knows, I know what I'd get, so I don't know, it'd just be crazy. But so all the rooms were taken, and there was only one bed available, and it was in room 19. So he asked him if he would take that room. He said, "Yeah, that's fine." So he goes up into the room, and there's the stranger. He's already asleep. The stranger's name was Samuel Hill. So he goes into his room, he climbs into his bed, and he begins to read his Bible. So he had the light on, begins to read his Bible. And the guy next to him wakes up, and he says, the guy who's reading his Bible says, "I'm sorry if I woke you up if I'm reading my Bible, but at the age of 19, I had promised my dying mother that I would read my Bible every night." Samuel Hill replies, "Well, if you're going to read it aloud. I'm a Christian too." Nicholson read John 15, and the two knelt for prayer. They stayed up until 2 a.m. discussing the needs of traveling Christians. And out of that chance meeting was born this worldwide ministry. The author says this: "Who can doubt the unseen hand of God in those circumstances? The hotel was full. There was only one bed remaining, and it just so happens to be the bed of this other Christian gentleman. And it just so happens that the two of them begin discussing, and it just so happens the Gideon's ministry is born." Let me point something out there in that. How many people do you think were affected by that ministry after that? How many people like Naomi, maybe who were running away from God, maybe who have left God, went into the hotel room that one night, opened up that drawer, pulled out a Bible that was because of these two gentlemen starting that ministry, and then they went back to God as well? Isn't it amazing how God brings us to a certain place under certain circumstances to work out his greater plan for his kingdom? The author here begins with a "by the way." By the way, there's this guy. His name happens to be Boaz. He's of the family of Elimelech. I'm just giving you guys, the author's just saying, I'm just giving you guys a little heads up of what's going on here. Let's get back to the story. I picked up on this word "happening" here because when she comes to the field, right, and it sets everything in motion there, and she just happened to come to the field. Now, we have to understand what it looks like to Ruth. Right, this is not, there's not a marker, right, that says Boaz, the field of Boaz. Welcome, you now entering the, there is one large field. And I want us to also notice that, why does this happen to Ruth? Is Ruth sitting at home being like, "Oh, I just hope something good happens to me. I'm just going to be praying about all this stuff." No, what does Ruth do? What is Ruth doing in the context of her happening to come to the field of Boaz? She's being faithful to her commitment to Naomi. She's doing what she said she is going to do. I need to take care of Naomi. I need to do some work. I don't know why Naomi didn't go out and help her. Maybe she's a little too old at this point to help her in the field. But Ruth doesn't say, hey, you know what I'm going to do today? Name Naomi's. I'm going to go out and I'm going to find myself a nice beau out in town, because I've seen some good-looking guys around here. I'm going to go out. I'm just going to try to talk. I'm going to bump into someone. No. What's she do? She's being faithful to her commitment to Naomi. She says, maybe I'm going to find favor with someone. This is a complete act of faith by Ruth. She has no idea where she is going. She has no idea what she is getting herself into. As a matter of fact, we know that it was dangerous because of what is said at the end of this chapter. People might have fallen upon her. They might have taken advantage of her. Ruth is faithful to her commitment and takes a step of faith out the door. And by walking forward, by taking that step of faith, God guides her steps. And it just so happens that he brings her to the field of Boaz. So she would look, and there's this one large field. Now, there would be some boundary stones that were set off, but it would be very easy for her to kind of walk across the different clans who owned the field. As a matter of fact, for the poor people to glean from those fields, they would probably want to make the most of it and then cross over as many boundaries as they can, gleaning after the reapers. Does that happen to Ruth? No. She comes to one certain field, and it is the field of Boaz. What precipitates that move? She walks out the door. She has a plan, somewhat of a plan. She's depending on God's grace. Maybe I will find favor. That word favor is going to come up again, and that is God's grace. Maybe I'll find favor in the sight of someone's eyes and I'll be helped. She doesn't have really high expectations. She has no idea what's going to happen, but she walks out the door. Folks, it's just so important for us to see. First of all, Ruth is being faithful to her commitment to Naomi, and in that faithfulness, God is guiding her steps. Do what we said we are going to do to begin with. That is how God is going to work out his plan in our lives. We don't need to look for all those specific circumstances. We don't need to set everything up. Walk in what we're called to do, and God is going to work everything out. I love the fact how out of all the field, out of that entire field, Ruth ends up at the one belonging to Boaz, the guy that the author just so happened to mention in the beginning. The second happening that I see here, and really the climax of all of these happenings, is a certain person happens to notice us. So God brings us to a certain place by us moving forward in faithfulness, and then a certain person is now brought into our life. Verses 4 through 16. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." And then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She's the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." Thus she came, and she has remained from morning until now. She's been sitting in the house for a little while. Boaz says to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? Boaz replies to her, All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me. How you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, who under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. She said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, Come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, Let her glean among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from bundles, and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. Pastor tells a story about meeting a young girl one night. Pastor, could I talk to you for a minute? Her voice was low, he said. She wasn't sure of herself. She looked to be in her early 20s. He said, a girl that I've never seen at our church before. It was my first year as senior pastor at a church in downtown Fresno, California. I was greeting people after the Wednesday night Bible study. What can I do for you? Would you please talk with my husband, she says. He moved out from our home and into an apartment with two young women. I don't know what to do. Pastor asked her, is he a Christian? He's the one who led me to a relationship with Christ, she says. Pastor said, I'd be glad to talk with him. How can I get in touch with him? She says, well, that's the problem. I can't reach him. If he wants to talk to me, he calls me. Pastor said, there's little that I can do. I asked her to have him call me if he talked with her again. He says, I remember leaving and seeing the look of despair in her eyes as she walked away. That was Wednesday night, and he said Friday was his day off. He said, I got up early, and we were landscaping our front yard, and I wanted it finished. He said, by late morning, the end was in sight, and it was hot. I was muddy, aching, and thoroughly tired from the whole project. To add to my woes, he says, I ran out of ornamental plants. I don't know why that's a woe for some people, but I guess it was a woe for him, ornamental plants. He says, I drove to the store. He said, the first store had the right kind, but the price was all wrong. He said, a store a mile down the road had them, and the price was just right. He said, I loaded up my cart and headed to the checkout. As I waited in line, I glanced at the cashier's name tag. It looked familiar. As he began to ring up the plants, I motioned to his name tag. Is that your name? Dumb question, he said, but I wanted to be sure. He said that the gentleman looked at him blankly, going on full village idiot alert. Yes. Are you married to so-and-so? And I named the woman who talked with me on Wednesday night. He looked warily. Yes, I am. I drew myself up, he said, to full 6'5", unshaven, messy, sweaty, and muddy. And he said, I gave him my happiest smile, saying, God has sent me here to talk to you about your marriage. He concludes and he says, some 300,000 people lived in the Fresno area then. Out of all of them, the first person that I talked to other than family and staff since that Wednesday night was this man. He goes, in a lifetime of seeking to be led by the Lord, that was the most powerful example I've ever experienced. Not only was I not really looking to be led, I wasn't even conscious of God's leading. I just wanted the yard finished. It is an amazing story, and it is amazing how God, if God wants something accomplished in our lives and in the lives of other people There is nothing going to stand in his way. And how he works all of that out amongst all of those people in California and all of those people, about 1,000 in Bethlehem at this time, is utterly amazing. Ruth was going out to do what? To work in the field. She has low expectations, and all of a sudden she finds herself in the middle of Boaz's field. And not only that, guess who happens to show up that day? Oh, it's Boaz. And if this were a movie, right, and this is reality, and it sounds like a Hallmark movie, if we put back on our Hallmark lenses, right, which we need to do for this, right, and we're watching this movie, you know those girls who are watching that, our wives that are watching it with us, right? When Boaz comes onto the scene, so there she goes, the scene ends, right, and it's Ruth. She finds a field. We all know whose field it is. She doesn't at this point. And it switches scenes, and all of a sudden the camera draws on this guy, and here comes Boaz, and we're like, wow, there he is, right? And what is Boaz like? What is the first impression that we get of Boaz? He's a man's man. He's a godly man. He says, may the Lord be with you. And all the girls are like, Lord, I hope these two meet each other, right? You know they're praying for that. They're like, oh, is he going to see her? Does he notice her? And right off the bat, we get this view of this person that now God is going to use to help this poor widow, and not just this poor widow, but Naomi, and not just Naomi, the nation of Israel, and not just the nation of Israel, the entire world. Just like that. God brings these people into our lives, and they just happen to notice us. Boaz embodies God's righteousness. What a beautiful story. Two faithful people in the midst of a land of unfaithfulness, in the midst of a land of people turning away from the Lord, this guy in this white horse, shining armor, enters into the scene. May the Lord be with you. God works out his plans no matter what is happening in this world. And God always saves for himself a remnant that remains faithful to him. And it just so happens, Boaz, this faithful man, and Ruth, this faithful girl, now meet. Boaz embodies this covenant righteousness. Covenant righteousness in the Israel time is righteousness to our, it is righteousness to our family, this horizontal righteousness, to creation, and to society or to social justice. Notice what he says to her. And it's extremely important that, again, what we want in our lives is what we need to be to others. How does God show his loving kindness to the foreigner and to the strangers of this world? He shows it through people like you and me. Ordinary people going about our lives, meeting these individuals who are in need and extending that grace and loving kindness to their lives. That's the gospel. That's what Boaz is doing. She's a foreigner. She says it two times. Two times. Why are you treating me like this? I'm a stranger. I'm not like your people. But he treats her like she is. That is righteousness. That is living out the gospel of Jesus Christ to those in need. Folks, it doesn't matter how they get here. If they are before us, we love them. We love them and we extend that loving kindness to them. We shed God's grace upon them. Listen to what he does. He doesn't chide her. He feeds her, he protects her, and he honors her. He doesn't make her feel bad. not only are they different, not only is she a foreigner and he's a native, they are different on an economic level as well. When he introduced Boaz in the beginning, Boaz is wealthy. She's not. He doesn't make her feel bad about that. He raises her up to a position of honor. Guys, what a great example of what it means to be Christ to those in need, especially to a woman like that. One commentator sums up his actions here and says that his comment in 12b holds the key to this remarkable sensitivity to this alien. Boaz views himself as the wings of Yahweh, under whose protection she has sought refuge. His actions represent the fulfillment of his own prayers for her. This is not the response of a legalist, but of a man guided by the law and its spirit. God shows his righteousness and loving kindness to others through you and me living out the gospel. We all need to be a Boaz. She is in a lower position, but he raises her up. How do you think this made Ruth feel? It made her feel safe, protected, honored, loved. Absolutely. I'd be amiss if I did not bring up the other story that is happening here. Boaz takes the initiative here, and he says, "Listen, my daughter." And so begins the relationship of one of the greatest love stories in the Bible. And it just so happens that this sermon falls on Valentine's Day. What a great sermon for Valentine's Day. What a great passage of, I don't know if it's a great sermon yet, you can tell me that afterwards. But what a great passage of Scripture for Valentine's Day, right? And commentators, of course, most of the commentators are guys, and they're like, we don't know how Boaz felt about her. We don't know if there were any feelings. And that's true. We don't know. And he is representing God's righteousness here. He is a good and godly man, and he is looking after the foreigner. But you got to think, too, right? He heard about her, didn't he? You think, you know, they're talking around town and Boaz is sitting down in the pub. He's having a beer and they're like, "Hey, Naomi's back." Well, they had grain, right? They had a lot of wheat that can make that stuff. All right, never mind. So there he is and they're like, "Hey, Naomi's back and she brought someone with her." Yeah, this girl, she left her family. She left her land. She left her God and she's with Naomi. Now, you don't think maybe possibly Boaz was like, "Lord, I want to meet that woman. That woman sounds really, really nice." And then lo and behold, there he is. But I want us to see something here. Because men, this is so important. And single men and single women, this is so important for us to see. Both are faithful to God. What is it that Boaz notices? It's her character. When she says, "Why are you having favor?" He doesn't, "Why are you having favor on me?" He doesn't say, "Man, because you are fine looking." That's not what he says, is he? He's like, "Girl, why would I not have favor on you?" He's not saying that. The story isn't, and all of a sudden Boaz turns and he says, "Who is that?" And then Ruth stands up and the sun is glistening upon her face, and they look at each other, and they run towards each other, and they hug each other. And that's not what's happening here. It's all character-based. Girls, you want to get someone's attention? Don't do it through your looks. Do it through your love and your character. That's what he says about her. "I heard what you done. I heard that you are faithful to Naomi. I heard that you are faithful to God. I heard about your character." We don't want to go looking for girls who are looking for attention. Ruth is working. She's doing what she needed to do. Boaz has heard all about her, and God brings these two faithful individuals together. That is how God works in our love stories. Bringing us together in his time, in his way. He blesses her for these attributes. If you want the best that God has for you, first and foremost, be faithful to him. That is what matters. And God is going to bring those individuals into your life. If that's what he wants for your life, that's what he's going to do. I think about this often with my own life and meeting Sarah. Now, I was really attracted to Sarah. I was, as soon as I met her, I'm like, man alive, that's a good-looking girl. But I prayed to the Lord, and because I knew from my past history and all of that, I knew that's not what's important. And I said, Lord, I hope she is as godly as she is beautiful. And I didn't know her at the time, and then as I got to know her, I just watched how she interacted with people. I paid attention to how she treated others. And I saw her one time clean up throw up from a stranger right here in this church. Some kid threw up. She cleans up throw up. And I watched her, how she took care of others. I watched her, how she treated her family, how she loved her family, but most of all, how she loved the Lord. And that made her so much more beautiful than she already was. This is a love story, but it's a love story in God's way. It's a love story of two faithful individuals and God bringing those people together. And what stands out in both of them is their character. The way he treats her is amazing. And the way that she has treated Naomi is just as amazing. Two people, both faithful to others and to God, going about their daily work. Look what happens. And we never know, not just in relationships, we never know who God is going to bring in to notice us when you and I are being faithful in the things that he has already called us to do. And that encounter is going to change our lives. And all of this happens on an ordinary day. I don't want to spend too much time on this part as we finish up here, but verses 17 through 19. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was an ephah of barley. She took it and went up into the city, and her mother-in-law, saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave it to Naomi, what she had left, and she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." I want us to notice the word satisfied both for Ruth now, how that last section ends with Boaz basically serving her and filling her, right? And he prayed for God's fullness for her, and there he is filling her, and Ruth is what? Satisfied. And now who else is satisfied? Naomi is satisfied. And all of this happens in a period of 24 hours. She gleaned in the field until evening. Here are the most incredible things that have happened in a single day. Macedonia will plant 6 million trees. It's pretty impressive. George Washington built a frozen city. He built the city to attack the British. And as a matter of fact, one of the generals said, "These rebels have done more in one night than my troops have done in a month." An empty lot became the town of Guthrie, Oklahoma, with a population of 10,000 overnight. During World War II, Ford built one bomber per hour. Iowans built a 380-mile road on their lunch break. They built up all the supplies, and then all at once, they all went out into this area and then paved this road, and the signs were up by the end of the day. Transcontinental Railroad lays 10 miles of track in less than 12 hours, and the day after the D-Day, Allies begin to build these floating cities 1 mile long each. That's amazing. That's a lot. Makes me, I'm like, yeah, I don't get that much done in a day. As amazing as those things are, it is not as amazing as what God can do in our lives in a period of 24 hours. Just an ordinary day. Ruth comes and she's holding, she can't even probably carry all the sheaves that she's taken, and she meets up with Naomi, and Naomi is beside herself. Hey, what on earth happened today? Where were you? Whose field did you glean? And she gives her all of these things. It's amazing what God can do in a single day. Ruth, Boaz, Naomi, Israel, the world changed just like that. You know, we wake up and we tend to think that God is always going to work in those bigger moments of our life. You know, those big retreats that we take, those big seminars. And God does work in those times, without a doubt, right? But what do we see here? One of his, the greatest plan of all time, the plan of redemption, is worked out in the ordinary lives of these two individuals in the context of a work day. That's how it's done. She went to work. Ruth gets up and says, it's time to make the donuts. Here I go. I'm going to go try to glean whatever I can. She's looking for scraps, and God satisfies her and Naomi, and God begins to act out this plan of redemption for the entire world, carrying on that line through these two individuals. 24 hours. Is it? It is absolutely amazing, and we can get discouraged, but most of the time, God is working out this beautiful plan that he has for us in this world in the day-in, day-out humdrums of life. And we don't expect it. That's what he does. And it's hard. Faithfulness is hard. Getting up, going to work, you know, we do the same thing over again, and we're like, what are we doing? Maybe you're a stay-at-home mom. You're wondering, what am I doing? I got laundry. That laundry keeps filling up. Why every time I look at that laundry bin is that filled up again? Why are there dishes to do again? What's going on here? Lord, I feel like I'm doing nothing. Or maybe you're going to work every day. Maybe both of you are working every day, trying to provide, trying to make ends meet. Maybe you're wondering, is God doing anything in my life? Well, look at this. Ordinary work day, but God begins an extraordinary plan. There weren't any crop circles or signs for Ruth. She's just being faithful. She got up, went to work, meets Boaz, everything changes. And two people are affected. But not only that, more people are affected. Fourth and final one, this happening happens to affect others. Verses 20 through 23. Naomi, so she finishes, she says, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. So the Boaz bomb is dropped. And Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. Again, Naomi said to her, the man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Then Ruth the Moabite said, hey, there's more. He said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. In Chase the Lion, Mark Batterson writes that in 1983, Lorne Whitehead published an article about the domino chain reaction. You can picture it in your mind. You knock over a domino, sets off a chain reaction that can knock down hundreds of dominoes in a matter of seconds. But the unique significance of Whitehead's research was discovering that a domino is capable of knocking over a domino that is 1.5 times its size. So 2-inch can topple 3-inch. 3-inch, 4.5-inch, and 4.5-inch can topple, well, you get the picture. We're not going to go through it all the way. By the time you get to the 18th domino, you can knock over the Leaning Tower of Pisa. However, you may say that's not fair because it's already leaning. All right, the 23rd domino can then knock over the Eiffel Tower. By the time you get to the 29th domino, you can take out the entire Empire State Building. In the realm of mathematics, and when I said that before in my practice, I can't believe I'm about to talk about mathematics in a sermon, but here we go. In the realm of mathematics, there are two types of progression, linear and geometric. I didn't know this, so this is all new for me. Linear progression is 2 plus 2 equals 4. Geometric progression is compound or doubling. 2 times 2 equals 4. If you take 32 linear steps, you're 90 feet from where you started. But if you take 30 geometric steps, you've circled the earth 26 times. He says this, faith isn't linear, it's geometric. Every decision that we make, every step of faith we take has a chain reaction, and those chain reactions set off 1,000 chain reactions that we are not aware of, and we won't know until we reach the other side of the space-time continuum. I would say that Ruth and Boaz had no idea of the chain reaction that they are about to set off. But we see, and we know that that last domino is able to topple the entire world. But we do see that it has already begun to travel a little further than just these two individuals, and the next domino to fall is Naomi. And Naomi falls pretty quickly. Talk about a different tune from Naomi, isn't it? Where's the last time we left? When, the last time that Naomi mentions the Lord, this is what it sounded like. He has dealt very bitterly with me. He is against me. He has afflicted me. Now she's blessing everybody and their brother. So it's interesting because people disagree on who Naomi is talking about that has not withdrawn his loving kindness, right? So she hears, it's kind of funny to watch the progression of this, right? Naomi sees Ruth coming along, got all this, all the sheaves, right? And she's like, who is the guy who took care of you? May he be blessed. And then all of a sudden, the name that was at the beginning of the passage, Boaz, is now on the Ruth, on the lips of Ruth. Boaz drops the bomb, and Naomi is just absolutely beside herself. And she breaks out into this blessing. But think about the change that has happened in this woman, all in a period of 24 hours. Who knows what Naomi was doing at home when Ruth was out in the field? Maybe she started thinking. Maybe she started praying, Lord, I know I'm real angry with you, but I just pray that, Lord, I just can't see your hand working in my life right now. Lord, even though I know that you're a God of loving kindness, it just feels like your hand is against me. Can you give me some help here? And at the end of the day, Ruth comes back, not only full of food, but full of hope. And she drops this name, Boaz, and the dominoes begin to topple. And I think that Naomi is talking, whether it could be intentionally ambiguous, where it's Boaz and the Lord who has not withdrawn their loving kindness or their kindness to the living and the dead. But I tend to think that it's the Lord. And the NASB, translating it, puts the Lord as the direct antecedent to whose loving kindness has not been withdrawn. She begins to see, guess what? God is not against me. And by God working in the life of Ruth and in the life of Boaz is now working in the life of Naomi, bringing her back to him. And of course, Naomi at this point kind of sees what's going on. And Ruth's like, hey, guess what? There's a little bit more. He told me to stay right. And she's like, matchmaker, yeah, you better stay right there because you don't want those other guys to fall upon you. You know, she's thinking, yeah, you keep real close to Boaz because God is doing something. And now I am beginning to see it. I was blinded to it before. But because of his loving kindness and grace in the life of Ruth and bringing Boaz into her path, God is opening up the eyes of Naomi. What God does in our life affects the lives of others. And in this case, it's going to affect the lives of the entire world. I love how he works in such simple and complex ways all at once. How he weaves all of these people together to work out his greater plan. It's an author that recounts a story during a trip to India. He says, I noticed a father and son who were weaving some of the most beautiful Indian wedding saris in the world. He explains the background and then describes the scene. He said, the sari, of course, is the garment that is worn by Indian women. It is usually 6 yards long. Wedding saris are a work of art. They are rich in gold and silver threads. They are resplendent with an array of colors. He said, the place that I was visiting was known for making the best wedding saris in the world. He said, I expected to see some elaborate system of machines and designs that would boggle the mind, but not so. Each sari was made individually by a father and son team. The father sat above a platform 2 to 3 feet higher than the son, who was surrounded by several spools of thread, some dark and some shining. The son did just one thing. At a nod from the father, he would move his shuttle from one side to the other and back again. The father would gather the threads in his fingers, nod once more, and the son would move the shuttle again. This would be repeated for hundreds of hours till you would begin to see a magnificent pattern emerging. The son had the easy task, just to move to the father's nod. All along, the father had this design in his mind, and he brought the necessary threads together in order to accomplish it. Folks, God happens to work out his eternal, extraordinary design in our everyday, ordinary lives. God has a design in his mind, and he's pulling those threads together. And as we move back and forth, he is nudging or nodding us this way and that way. And we may not see it now, but we know in the end, it is extraordinary. What a difference from when we first started in this book, isn't it? We started with hopelessness. And if God were left out of this story, there'd be no story at all. Folks, every day God is working out his plan, his design for our lives as individuals, his design for the lives of others around us, and his design for this entire world. We wake up, we happen upon a certain place. Certain special person happens to notice us. It all happens on an ordinary day, and it just so happens to affect those around us. And at the end result, it is another chapter in God's beautiful story of redemption, a design that you and I will all see at the end. A day that started out with little hope ends full of it. I wonder what will happen next. Father, thank you for how you work out such a wonderful plan in our everyday, ordinary lives. Help us to remain faithful to the things that you have called us to do, trusting and knowing that you are going to work everything out for our good and for your eternal purposes. Thank you for allowing us to be part of such a beautiful story, one in which we all know has an extremely happy ending. We pray in Jesus' name, amen.